We get it. After all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works, you're ready for something steady. Something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we're excited to introduce the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. Built with you in mind, it's more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Finally, a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, and gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. Because you deserve a lifeline after all those outdated platforms. You deserve a system that keeps up with your goals and grows with your success. This isn't just a redesign, it's a revolution. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today. That's thebuzzcrm.com. We get it. After all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works, you're ready for something steady. Something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we're excited to introduce the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. Built with you in mind, it's more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Finally, a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, and gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. Because you deserve a lifeline after all those outdated platforms. You deserve a system that keeps up with your goals and grows with your success. This isn't just a redesign, it's a revolution. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today. That's thebuzzcrm.com.
Welcome to SEO 101, your introductory course on search engine optimization. So, turn on your computers, open your minds, grab your mouse, and get ready to get back to the basics. SEO 101 on webmasterradio.fm. Is now in session.
Hello and welcome to SEO 101 on cranberry.fm, episode number 282. This is Ross Dunn, CEO of Stepforth Web Marketing, and my co-host is John Carcutt, the director of SEO and social media for Advanced Local.
How are you doing? I'm good. I was just noticing you really have a good radio voice, you know, that I never noticed that before. I've talked to you a thousand times and it's like, he sounds good on the radio.
Oh, thanks.
It's funny. I don't know why. Maybe I'm on drugs or something today.
Yeah, I don't know what's wrong, man. He's complimenting me. What do you want? I love doing voices with my kids when I'm reading books. They're like, no, stop it. Stop it. Do it in your normal voice. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, please don't do any voices here. That would be
well,
bad.
Even just... Just adding a timbre or even doing my radio voice. No, nothing. I'm like, oh, man, I would have loved it if my dad did that. Maybe he did. I don't remember. Or it traumatized me. I have no idea. Okay, so today we're going to, as promised, going to do some back to basics. Thanks to a question from Dave Barbush a while back. But first, the news. And why don't you lead?
Just real quick, make sure everybody knows. Last show we did your final warning that interstitial penalties rolling out on January 10th. Well, it's now past January 10th. So if you hadn't taken care of it, it'd be interesting to see how your site's reacting, because that penalty that it's rolling out, it may have rolled out by the time this episode airs, but it's in play. So if you're having issues and you're using those interstitials, this could be a really good reason why you're having issues all of a sudden.
And it's just rolling out, it's not out completely, so you may still have time if you haven't got your button gear yet, and it is for mobile only at this point. How long that will last, I have no idea, but
Can you do interstitials on desktop, or is it just called pop-ups on desktop? I don't know.
I guess I've seen interstitials on desktop. I just sort of consider them that, but they make you watch something or make you read something and then click to see the content.
So what would a pop under be? Would it be that? Definitely wouldn't be an interstitial. I don't know. It's weird.
There's all these new fangled words from these newbies out there.
I know. the world today is changing.
Yes. And next we have, as you put it, a mini Mueller file.
It's a mini one. A little one.
Yes.
Well, you know, we've been using this for years. If you go to Google search and you type link colon in the URL or a page, it'll tell you how, approximately how many links are pointing to that. Well, I don't know about you, Ross, but I stopped using that many years ago because it was never accurate. It always only showed you a portion of the links. You never knew which ones it was showing you. And John Mueller on his weekly is it still a video hangout on Google Plus, or did they move it over to something new? But he does that video hangout.
Someone asked,
and he just reestablished that no, do not use the link colon. They won't tell us why, but they're insisting that it's not valuable data, and it's because it's not valuable data. It never has been for many years now. So I just wanted to reemphasize that for those of you getting into the game and you start reading about the link colon, it's not really a useful tool anymore.
Yeah, I believe. Mueller said that he thought that Gary Eish would say don't use it. It was kind of weird how he put it that way. But anyways, it's useless anyway. I don't know why anyone's using it, like you said.
Yeah, I'm saying don't use it. I'll tell you that.
I was kind of surprised to see it even in the news. But, you know, I still see that. I mean, we've been interviewing people in the Philippines for SEO just to get some assistance on certain projects. And you know, some of them are very good. And some of them, actually, I'd have to say the majority of them aren't bad at SEO, but they are using vastly outdated info. And it's amazing. Yeah. Like, I don't know how. Well, there's a lot of good content out there.
Yeah, and that's why I wanted to bring this up today. We did say we're going back to basics. And if you're getting into SEO for the first time, you're just learning it, you're going to see stuff like this. And you're going to see things that people have been using for many years and have written tons of articles about how, you know, with examples of how to do this. And it's just good for us to let you know that, hey, this used to be a good tool, but it hasn't been for quite some time.
Yeah. And big news about...
Oh, yeah.
Yahoo.
Okay, we're not going to be able to say that anymore.
No, I know. It's so weird.
It is.
Anyway, Marissa Meyer is stepping down. I've lost track of Yahoo so much that I didn't even realize she was still up. She wasn't stepping down. So she must just be on she's the last person on the sinking ship, I guess.
Yeah, she's still there. She's trying her best.
Oh, good for her. Good for her. It must be hard.
It will be interesting to see where she lands, though. She's a very smart woman.
I would kind of hope she did a startup. She'd probably do a very good job, but it would be hard.
and for those new who haven't been in the industry for a while, Marissa Meyer used to be she was one of Google's first 20 employees, wasn't she? She headed up the Maps thing for many, many years, right? She kind of built that up from scratch before she moved over to Yahoo. And then now she's moving on.
Okay, so there are some pretty funny... I hate when there's music in the background room. Okay, so I just went to a page and the damn music started playing. When I was reading about Altaba, that's the new name.
Yahoo's changing his name. Yeah. We didn't mention that yet.
Yes,
Yahoo will no longer be Yahoo. It'll be how do you pronounce it, Ross?
Altaba.
Altaba.
That's
nice.
As far as I know. Maybe there's a Yank way of saying it, but Altaba? I don't know. Anyway.
You were not supposed to be doing voices, Ross. Remember, we talked about
this
in the beginning of the show.
That's pronunciation.
All right.
Anyway, I love that some of the people's thoughts on the name. Here's just a few. I'm going to try and jump through this article quickly, but... a name that sounded more like infant babble than the remnants of a once promising internet giant. Another person says, ask your doctor if Altaba is right for you.
That's a good one.
Altaba is Latin for, we should have taken Microsoft's $45 billion offer in 2008. not to be confused with Alt-ABBA, the crypto white nationalist Swedish pop group.
That's the first thing that came to my mind, too. I honestly thought the same thing.
Altaba was named using the traditional new media method. Put a tape recorder next to a baby's crib and give it Kettle One. there's nice. Some really good ones. That's not the best one. I couldn't find the best one I read. It was perfect. Here's more. What's this? Gannett will become Tegna? In a rebranding that appears to involve Scrabble tiles and a Yahtzee cup. I don't know what Gannett is. I guess that's another one that's changed.
Gannett, maybe.
Gannett? Oh, okay.
Gannett. That's National Newspaper Media Company. They run USA Today.
Ah, okay. There you go. Anywho, not the best name.
No. Of course, think about it, though. It is one of those kind of names that you can build a brand around, right? Because it doesn't really mean anything. Just, you know, it means less than Yahoo did when Yahoo first launched. Yahoo at least was, you know, you could call somebody a Yahoo. It meant they were a moron. But so, you know, people thought, well, why did they pick that? Google really didn't mean anything except it was a misspelling of a very large number, right? So they can build a brand around it and turn it into something.
Oh, interesting. Someone notes here that it's worth noting the name is phonetically similar to Alibaba.
Alibaba.
That's the name of the Chinese internet giant that is part owned by Yahoo.
Ah.
Very interesting.
That is interesting.
Anyway, what does the name Altaba mean? Let's see here. It doesn't seem to be showing up anywhere in the social...
Has anybody actually hit Alt-A-B-A on your computer while you're on Yahoo? It should do something.
But by computer. It'll launch the new Altaba search worm.
There you go.
Yeah. Anyway, not the best name, but I think they should have just gone back to and they should have bought the name AltaVista and gone with that. I miss it.
Yeah. They could have brought Ask Jeeves back too, you know.
Isn't that
they could have brought him out of retirement.
Isn't that owned by Disney?
I'm not sure, but you know, the commercials for Verizon, and now they have the guy that used to say, "Can you hear me now?" is now saying, "I switched and now I'm listening." So they could do the same thing with Ask Jeeves. Switch him to a new brand and just have him go.
Well, one of the articles I read, it was so good. It included the video for the original Lycos commercial. I posted it on Facebook. Oh, it's so
funny. Wow.
So funny. Oh, dear. Okay. So
have you read? I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if their plans. I don't know if their plans are to stick with being a search engine. Have you read into that? So once they rename and Marissa Meyer drops out, are they still planning on trying to be a search engine? Or are they going to go to one of their other verticals that they've been working on so diligently over the past few years?
That's a good question. It's email service, sports verticals, and various apps. Is part of the Verizon purchase.
How
so
big of a deal?
Who knows?
Is this?
I would.
so if you're one of those people that had a Yahoo email address for years, are you going to have to switch it to a Altaba email address? Interesting. I don't know.
It says here the new name is meant to be a combination of the words alternative and Alibaba. Huh. That's a strange idea. I wonder if that's true. Well,
I don't know. All right.
Okay. Enough of that. Yeah, that's totally beat to death. Okay. So let's before we jump into the next theme, this is the bulk of the show. I think we should take a quick break. And next up is how to develop a new site that is SEO ready.
SEO 101 will be back right after recess. Do you have cold, hard cash burning a hole in your pocket? Let Cranberry Radio lighten your load. Just hand us that burdensome dinero, and we'll get you set up with your very own radio show. We produce, edit, and amplify the show. All you have to do is show up. It's time for you to make an impact. We're glad to help. Just hand over the cash. Space is limited, so contact us now at sales@cranberry.fm.
Is your website hacked? Is your website displaying error messages or loading slowly? Even if there are no signs of malicious activity, your site may still be compromised. Websites, like cars, require regular maintenance to perform at their best and not leave you stranded. At Fjorge, our website maintenance experts can help you assess which one of our maintenance plans will best support your needs. Visit fjorgedigital.com or call 612-877-3840 and get the support and protection your website and business deserve. That's fjorgedigital.com.
Are you paying too much for your paid advertising, or have you quit altogether because it seemed like a huge waste of money? Studies show that companies waste 25% of their PPC spend on average. The web marketing experts at WMETraining.com can show you how to make your AdWords account a lean, mean converting machine. Whether you're just starting out or want to take your skills to the next level, we have a class for you. Contact the web marketing experts at WMETraining.com.
Jamming and spamming, cashing in the clicks. SEO is always in session, only on Cranberry Radio, cranberry.fm.
Okay, class, take your seats and no talking. Recess is over and SEO 101 is back in session.
Welcome back to SEO 101 on Cranberry.fm, hosted by John Carcutt, the Director of SEO and Social Media for Advanced Local, and myself, Ross Dunn, CEO of Stepforth Web Marketing, Inc. Okay, how to develop a new site that is SEO ready. This is...
So here, real quick, what's the difference between SEO ready and SEO friendly?
Exactly. Well, in this case... maybe it's just based on Dave's question, which I was about to read here. So Dave Barbush asked, I guess what I'm really looking for, he was asking about some more basic SEO tips, is how to develop a new site that's SEO ready, meaning I'm not an SEO, but I want to set the plate for them as best I can. Is there more that I can do besides having 2 to 4 keywords mentioned three or more times on a page? Okay.
First stop with that.
Yeah. Okay. We will impart what we can here.
I want to make sure we're clear, though. So we'll talk about SEO ready versus SEO friendly. But from this question, he's talking about a brand new site, and I think that's how we're approaching this, right? So if it was a redesigned site, there's going to be some other steps from an SEO perspective that you have to do that are critical that we're not going to talk about today. So think of this as you're launching a brand new site from scratch. There's never been one in existence before, not I got my site and I want to relaunch it and change it and make it better.
Yeah.
All right. Just want to set that framework there. Yeah,
it's a whole different list, isn't it? I mean, there's aspects, of course, that are the same, but there's quite a difference order and a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Very good. So first of all, developing a new site that's SEO ready, we're kind of approaching it as, okay, you're going to do the SEO to a degree yourself and then bring in an SEO. But we have noted in our list here at what point you would bring in an SEO professional if in an ideal case. Now, SEO ready versus SEO friendly we're talking about a simple episode here. So I would say from a simplistic perspective, there's not much difference. Would you?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, SEO ready is, to me, you've got the bare bones done, and SEO friendly is you've really done some work to optimize, right? I guess that's where you place it different. And from his question, that's exactly what he wants. He wants, I need the bare bones so when I do bring in an SEO, he doesn't have to do a lot of core work to be effective and show results. And that makes sense.
Okay, so I tried to roughly order this. You were John. So in step one, before you even get going on anything, and this does not happen enough, people need to plan and establish their site expectations and goals. This alone, when I work with clients, can take a couple hours of talk. I mean, it, at the very least, and in some cases they don't have any of this planned, it can take a lot longer and sometimes less if they've already got a plan. I've had some clients that are way more organized than I ever expected.
Yeah. I can't tell you how many times I've sat with a client and said, first question you ask is, okay, what do you want your website to do for your business? And they look at you like the deer in the headlights. They have no clue what you just said.
That's a good question I get. Okay, well, scratch out my page and start to square one here.
Exactly.
So, I mean, this alone could be a show. Goals and expectations. Well, I mean, one of the questions that I think of from an SEO's perspective is, are you talking local? Are you targeting national? Or is it international? Is it all of the above? Is it a mix? If it's local, that does play a different role from an SEO's perspective and how the site could be laid out. Certainly, some of the content details that should be on the site, the schema, it's a markup that happens in the background of the page. There's a whole number of things there. And now you're noting some very important things too here. So I'll let you just jump in on those.
Yeah. So you know, other than what's your target market, you have to understand what's the goal of your site. Are you publishing a site to drive brand awareness? You know, to if people are doing due diligence and want to know more about your brand, or really strictly about brand awareness, are you publishing a website to drive leads to your business? Maybe you have a business that runs off of leads. Maybe your business is direct sales and you're doing e-commerce online and you want direct conversions on your site. You have to understand what the goal of that site is. What are you trying to accomplish from a business perspective? And then to Ross's point, now who are you targeting from a marketing perspective? Are you targeting just your local neighborhood because you're a local pizza shop that you're trying to get your branding out there? Or are you have a product you're selling online and you want to sell it nationally? There's different strategies and different ways to set up things based on those types of goals. It makes a huge difference.
Yeah. And even down the line when we're configuring Google Search Console, all the things get a little more advanced. And this part of, you know, a lot of these questions can be answered quite quickly if you've done your homework and prepared a business plan or at least a marketing plan. And I just mean offline one even. Just, you know, these are a lot of the questions you have to answer before you get into this.
And just a point to Dave, who asked the question originally, if you are doing a website and you want to set the foundation and then you're looking to have an SEO work on it, if they don't ask you questions about your goals first thing, go to the next candidate and find somebody else.
Fire them, I heard you about to say.
Yeah, do not hire them. Find someone who asks those questions first and foremost.
Yes. Yeah, I take great pride, and I make it very clear to clients that's the first thing I need to know. And because the reason is very simple. You want to deliver business to them, and you need this information. You don't just get a ranking and any old ranking and move on. That's a fly-by-night SEO company, in my opinion, or at least a very poor one. Yeah, you need to be like I like to say, when we're working with our clients, we become their marketing department. Because we work with a lot of small and medium-sized businesses that may not be able to afford an SEO in-house or even a big marketing department. So we are becoming an extension of them.
It's funny, Ross. You know Daryl Long. Yeah. I used to work with him many years ago, and he and I were doing a little bit of consulting with each other at one point. And we registered a domain. We were going to market ourselves, and the name of the company was Our SEO Team. So when someone was in the marketing department and said, oh, we need some help, somebody get a hold of Our SEO Team. So it was like we were already part of their company because that was the name of our brand.
Nice. Well, you just gave a great idea to everyone.
Yeah, I don't know if we still own that domain or not.
that's a good idea. I like it. Yeah, and it's exactly, I think, part of the reason why I've had what success I have is that we try to do that. And it's a very important part of our business is offering that value add. So many businesses don't. They seem to lose interest once they've got the client. That's a shame.
Yep. It's like their emphasis is closing the business, not providing the service.
Right. Yeah. You know, we have this is our 20th year, which is kind of cool. And
very cool. Congratulations, man.
Thank you. Yeah. At some point I'll make an announcement or something. I don't know. It's overwhelming. There's always so much going on. But and we've got one client that's been with us 20 years, the whole 20 years.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, huh?
Yeah. So I'm going to get an invite to the 20th anniversary party, right?
Yes. Unfortunately, we will not be flying people out, though. So, but you guys, you Americans get great deals out here.
Okay.
And it's nice. What, 30%?
As long as your couch is available, I'm good.
It is. It isn't. It's a fancy new one. So there you go.
Oh, nice.
So the next part is, and you crossed out keyword appropriately and said topic research.
Actually, before we get into that, this is the point. Before you start, yes, the next step is where you, if you can and you have the opportunity, this is where you want to bring in your SEO. If you're hiring somebody externally or you have somebody internally that's helping you, this is where they need to start getting involved. So again, back to the original question, you know, we're going to set the framework if you're going to bring them in later. But if you have the opportunity, this is where they need to start working with you.
Yeah. So, Dave, I realize what you're saying is make the site SEO ready, get the structure, get everything done so they can work on it. Well, this is more of an ideal situation where we're actually brought in during the planning. Just to reiterate that and make it as clear as possible. Okay, so topic research. These days, keyword research isn't quite the word for it. I just still use it because, frankly, I get that all the time from clients. But topic research.
It's muscle memory, right?
It is. It totally is. What is the topic, the various topics people are searching for? So we're looking at keywords, yes, but keywords that are related to a topic, semantically related. It's important to know what keywords are being used for the topic you're targeting for the specific areas of your site. You don't just do it for your one. And, well, I guess if you've got only one thing you're offering, you can do that. But in most cases, there's sections of a site that are targeting different things, and you can get more fine-tuned.
And this is actually a really good place to help a future SEO, because one of the first things you use this topic research for is the architecture of your site and helping build out your navigation. Because if you can really identify very clear topic areas that relate to your business or products and services, you help organize and structure your site that way. That's going to help your SEO in the long term. Absolutely.
Okay. Once you've done your topic,
one more thing about topic research. I've talked to too many clients, and if you're doing this on your own, be aware that when you're talking about what kind of content and topics you're going to have on your website, it's very important that you step outside of your business owner or business management persona and step into your client's persona when you're doing this research. It's much more important for you to answer the questions that the clients are asking about your products and services than try to think of what you want to tell them about your products and services, because many times those things do not mesh, and you're going to have much better chance of getting good organic search traffic if you're answering questions than telling them things that they're not even asking about, right?
And time on site and, you know, just pure dwell time. I mean, they're going to be on your site. They're going to be interested. It took me a little embarrassingly long time to really grasp that people, when they come to my site, don't really give a damn about me, you know, about the business. They're a little bit, they're interested, but really they're there because they want help. They need something fixed. They need an answer. They need a solution. And we gradually, over time, switched up our message, and what a difference!
did I ever tell you, Ross? It was last year. I finally came up with an answer to the question, "What do you do?" You know, I'm an SEO, and I tell people this. Well, what does an SEO do? And it literally took me almost 20 years to come up with a simple answer to that question, and it's really tied to this. So, that really, if someone says, "What do you do as an SEO?" I say, "Well, really, it's based on the assumption that Google's job is to find the best answer to a question, right? So anytime you go to search, you're doing a question, you're asking a question, Google's giving you the best answer they can find to that question. As an SEO, it's my job to understand how they determine what that question, the best answer is, and help my clients build those best answers on their websites. Right. So it's all about the questions people are asking from search, your topic research, your content research and creation. All that stuff should tie back to what are people asking in search? What questions are they asking?
Yeah, nice. I like it. Okay. So once you've done your topic research and you've clearly outlined it, you should have a very good grasp of what words are going to play a strong role in the work you do. So now you can choose a domain. Now, I say this with one clarification. That is that keyword filling a domain is not going to help you. It has no impact on search results directly or whether or not your site will rank. However, if, for example, you are a pizza place in a town, and you manage to find a domain, let's say victoriapizza.ca or .com or whatever it is, that would be a good one to get. And the reason why is if someone's going to link to you, if they're going to mention you, they're going to say, oh, check out Victoria Pizza. Because that's and they'll use victoriapizza.com. It just there's a synchronicity to that that works well. And then you end up with an anchor text to your website, people mentioning your business using those words. All those things do add up to improving your overall visibility under phrases that are related to that.
And I would go as far as saying these steps that we just talked about wouldn't be bad to do before you name your business, because you're much better off if you're starting a new website. I'm assuming it's a brand new business too, because any business that's never hasn't had a website till now is already way behind the game. So I'm assuming you're starting a brand new business because you're launching a brand new website. If you find that you can get the domain Victoria Pizza and you haven't named your business yet, name your business Victoria Pizza too, right? Because there's a lot of reasons why in different areas that the name of your business and your website should be very close, if not the same.
Great.
But Ross's point is great as well. If you can get those kind of names, Victoria Pizza, and you can name your business that you're way ahead of the game from the local search perspective.
Yeah, definitely. Now, you mentioned researching domain history too, right?
Yeah, and then it's very hard to find a domain these days that hasn't been owned by somebody at one point. I mean, it's very, very hard to find that, especially ones with that have common words in them, are specific to locations tied to common words, or brands for businesses that have common niches, right? So, you know, Bob's Pizza, there's a good chance, there's almost 100% chance that bobspizza.com has been registered somewhere in the world. So since your domain is probably not going to be, you're probably not going to be the very first owner of this domain, you want to check the history of the domain if you can. And there's a few tools out there that can do it, but you want to make sure that somebody that owned it in the past didn't do things that would damage the domain in the eyes of the search engines. Maybe it has a massive penalty on it from an existing or a previous website. One of the things I would do is go to some of the free backlink research tools like Open Site Explorer, Majestic, and just see what the backlink history of the site looks like, see if there's any issues there. And if you're not an SEO, this is, again, why you should probably have an SEO in there at this point. It might not be something that you understand, but it's also very important, because if you buy and plan a brand new site around a domain that has a massive penalty on it already, that's going to hurt you big time from an SEO perspective.
Or it could even have a kind of a negative tone to the type of links that are being pointed to it too.
Exactly. Go to archive.org. It's a site that tries to archive the entire internet. Type in that domain you want to buy. See if there was a site on it before that was archived, and see what that site was. With any luck, it was not a porn site, right? So,
or it was a pizza place that had extremely poor reputation.
Exactly, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and you can research that as well.
Do what you can to don't just say, oh, look, I got this cool domain. I can't believe I bought it for $100. You know, make sure you understand the history behind it if at all possible.
Or maybe they bought it for $1,000 or something through one of these bidding systems. I mean, anything could happen, and that would be pretty tragic.
Very true.
All right, so that's just one aspect of it, but I think choosing domain is a pretty major step. The next would be choosing a platform. I always, not always, but most of the time I push towards WordPress. It's very familiar. It's very simple to use in many ways. You will never have a problem finding a developer for it at affordable rates. And there's tons of plugins that make life a lot easier when you're doing optimization. And once that goals and expectations section, once you've got that complete, you will also have an idea of what kind of plugins you need if you're going to use a platform like WordPress to perhaps fulfill some of those. Well, one obvious one is an SEO plugin. You're going to need that to get the rankings or help you with them. But you might need a newsletter, pop up or something that you know has a good reputation. Well, it's time to do a little research, determine what these are before you use them, and that can make life a lot easier when it's time to launch.
And remember that, again, going back to the goals piece, if you're in e-commerce, maybe WordPress isn't right. Maybe you want a more of an e-commerce platform like Magento or something. Mm-hmm. But if you only have one or two products, maybe WordPress is the right thing. So you have to look at this platform selection based on the goals of your site. What are you trying to accomplish? And I agree. I'm a big fan of WordPress, a big fan of Magento, but there's other, you know, fairly good platforms out there. One thing I will note, even WordPress, which is probably one of the most SEO-friendly CMSs out of the box, there are configurations that need to happen to make it even more SEO-friendly, right? Oh, yeah. So there are things you can do to every one of them to make them even more friendly, you know, SEO-friendly.
And one caveat, too, is I don't want to say completely avoid them because there are situations where I've been quite impressed, but it's extremely rare, in my opinion, to find a good proprietary system that you don't mind investing everything in. Because so if you find a content management system that's being built by a specific vendor, well, you might be in hot water if that vendor goes underwater and it doesn't go well and, you know, runs out of – goes out of business. Perhaps updates don't happen enough. Their rates increase. They start charging more on a monthly basis, on an annual basis. Maybe changes to the site are difficult. Maybe you can't add any custom programming to it. It's all of these things I've run into. It's pretty insane how many problems can come from a proprietary system. Try to go open source or, consider using a hosting platform, which I know you want to mention.
I was going to say consider not using a hosting platform.
Well, hosting some platform. Of them you can, but...
Well, you can. It depends, again, back to your goals. So if you're just doing branding, you could probably get away with those hosted platforms. And a hosted platform, what we're talking about, is one of those companies. Wix is a good example where you log in, they give you an account, and you can drag and drop and build pages of your website on their platform. It's kind of a self-service thing. You can get domains for that and have it run on your own domain as well. One of the problems I have with that as an SEO and when I'm working with client sites from SEO, if they're getting into SEO, they really understand, you know, the need for SEO. One of the problems from the technical side is most of these hosted platforms won't let you fix issues when they're found. Because what happens if you find an issue for a client on a hosted platform, you say, well, you need to fix this. The hosted platform won't change their platform to accommodate one site. They make a change, it's going to go across the board to all their sites, and they're not going to do that for one client. So if there's a technical issue that doesn't quite work right for them, it's not going to be able to be fixed, which is why if you have anything close to a complicated site, any e-commerce, doing lead gen, you know, if you have a lot of content in your content strategy that you're doing, complicated stuff, stay away from those hosted platforms. But if it's just a branding play and you're just going to go out there and you're going to basically treat it like a blog and get your name out there and maybe have a page for your local search stuff targeted to your business location, that's fine. But there are going to be limitations. If you wanted to put, they say you wanted to put location schema markup on your location page, you might not be able to do that because they'd have to be able to do that for every one of their clients and not just you.
Right. So hosted platforms, one example of a platform, I can't remember the name of it actually, but type of platform that has been helpful somewhat for prospects, at least that I talked to, were photographers. There were some pretty decent photography sites out there or platforms that, you know, it's very graphic intensive. There's lots of really cool plugins they could use. There's a lot of real estate ones too that do a very good job, but they're not all created equal. So you got to do your homework if you're going to go that route and be aware of those downsides we mentioned. Okay.
No, I was going to say, this is another good place if you have the opportunity to get an SEO to help you evaluate these platforms.
Absolutely. And someone you trust, obviously you don't want anyone who's going to be just saying, no, you need to use mine. Because exactly. That happens too. All right, let's take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to talk about some wireframing.
SEO 101 will be back right after recess.
Do you have cold, hard cash burning a hole in your pocket? Let Cranberry Radio lighten your load. Just hand us that burdensome dinero, and we'll get you set up with your very own radio show. We produce, edit, and amplify the show. All you have to do is show up. It's time for you to make an impact. We're glad to help. Just hand over the cash. Space is limited, so contact us now at sales@cranberry.fm.
Looking for a better way to get more traffic and interaction to your Facebook page? Imagine Facebook interactivity on your page like you've never seen. Introducing your new Facebook marketing fix, ZoSocial, the new and revolutionary way to easily manage and automate your Facebook contests and sweepstakes. Create a fun, easy-to-win contest by writing a simple Facebook post. Watch your post go more viral and generate loads of interaction. Track your traffic and generate email lists with ease. ZoSocial is mobile-friendly and complies with Facebook terms of service. Let ZoSocial give your Facebook page some flash today. Zoom over to ZoSocial.com.
Cranberry Radio is your new destination for education, entertainment, and engagement. Browse through our complete library of programs at cranberry.fm or on demand through iHeartRadio, iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, and Google Play. Don't worry, you can still access all of our great webmasterradio.fm programs at cranberry.fm. Refresh your bookmarks today to Cranberry Radio at cranberry.fm.
Online anytime. This is Cranberry Radio, cranberry.fm.
Okay, class, take your seats and no talking. Recess is over and SEO 101 is back in session.
Welcome back to SEO 101 on cranberry.fm, hosted by John Carcutt, the director of SEO and social media for Advanced Local, and myself, Ross Dunn, CEO of Stepforth Web Marketing, Inc. So once you've got the platform picked out, it's time to do a little wireframing, at least in an ideal situation. I mean, not everyone's up to this task, but there's some great platforms like Mockflow. That's one of my favorites. And some other ones you can buy that make – there's tons of them now, actually. I think they've kind of come under their own there's quite a few out there that have launched over just the last 2 years, I think.
And let's talk about what wireframing is. And I think wireframing in our next bullet, we're going to talk about the idea of frames versus themes for a CMS versus custom design. And I think wireframing really fits primarily for those people who are doing custom design. But talk a little bit about what it is.
Sure. So wireframing is a simple way of using just black and white, using lines to create a rough outline of how a page is going to look from a graphical or a pure structural perspective. You generally, although there are some like Mockflow that allows you to upload images, but in general, you're just going to be putting in box here, box there. This is what this is going to be. You get to put notes in. Then you can even outline functionality for specific aspects of the page. And what it allows you to do is quickly drag and drop and determine what looks are going to be best. You can run it by a conversion optimization specialist if you decide to hire one. And they can give you some more input on exactly what kind of layout is going to do the best for the kind of goals and expectations you have. But what I love the most about wireframing is how simple it is to see how something might look. And just, it can be pretty difficult these days with using design. It's getting better, but dragging and dropping can be quite clunky.
Yeah, and where this comes into play from an SEO perspective, and I've got these from clients in the past on a number of occasions, and where you get a wireframe and you're looking at it from the SEO perspective, you can look and see, okay, where's the navigation located and how is it structured? Do they have enough area on the page for actual text-based content, or is it all just one big image? What's in the footer? Are there links to, it really gives you an idea of how the page is structured from a internal linking perspective and a content placement perspective, probably more than anything.
Yeah, and I usually at this point, if you haven't brought an SEO in, this is definitely a point where you'll benefit from some input. I try to get involved at this stage for every contract because I could look at a page and see what John essentially mentioned there too. But you think about, okay, this is a big box. Is this really going to be an image? Okay, what image? If you got an idea, okay, how are you going to make that look good and still not take a ton of download time? Okay, great. Now, in terms of this navigation menu, is it really going to fit all the menu items you want? How is that going to look in mobile? These are big questions. And yeah, the text is important as well, and also any technology they want to include. We don't have the answers to everything, but we'll certainly be able to tell you if more research is required or if there's some obvious stumbling blocks.
Yep.
Now, the next part, choosing a theme or custom design. So if you decide, all right, so this is the wireframe, this is what I want. All right, now, you can go hunting. If you're going to use WordPress, go. There's a ton of different sites, and try to find which themes tend to fit with what you want. You can find ones that are pre-created. These are themes that on elegantthemes.com, that's the one I like to use, or a number of them. But you can also find ones like Divi that allow you to structure just about any way you want.
And there's two different basic kinds of – there's the free themes and there's what they call premium themes. And free themes are just anybody and everybody creating a theme with and you really don't have a lot of – I personally don't have a lot of trust in those because if somebody wants to embed something nasty in a theme, it's usually in a free theme. If it's somebody just learning how to code, they'll put it out as a free theme and could have issues from that perspective. Free themes aren't usually updated as much and kept up to date when WordPress or whatever CMS you're using updates. So I try to stay away from the free themes, primarily because the premium themes are very good looking. And considering this is your website for your business and it's going to be around for a long time, extremely cheap. You can get a really, really nice, good-looking theme for under $50.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So there's no reason not to go that direction.
Yeah, exactly. And if you want to have a little more control, let's say you don't find a pre-created theme that looks right, I mentioned Divi. There's also Thrive. These are different, almost, they're themes, but you install them and they work as a platform in a sense. Platform's the wrong word, but they allow you to structure the site using drag and drop interfaces that are just awesome. I use them all the
Genesis
time.
Genesis is another good one.
It's not drag and drop like that though, is it?
It's not drag and drop, but it's a really good framework.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's way more complicated in terms of newbies, I would think. Divi literally is drag and drop and so is Thrive. Genesis has definitely got a learning curve to it. But it's huge compliments to it, though. I mean, a lot of people use it. And you'll have much more flexibility if you use a system like that. But, you know, that learning curve is it's not insignificant.
And the one that just to make sure we note that the ones we just talked about are all WordPress related. There are going to be different ones for things like Magento and other CMSs.
Yeah, you can tell which ones we lean towards.
Yes, exactly.
Magento and Joomla are decent platforms by definitely, but I've had many a headache working with them, so I try to stick with WordPress when possible.
Drupal's got a lot better over the past few years, but it used to be a pain as well, but now it's gotten a lot better.
That's good.
Yeah.
But they also have their own learning curves significantly.
Are there any CMS platforms that you would completely stay away from? I have at least one in my list.
Not coming right to the top of my head right now. I'm sure there are.
The one that drives me crazy every time I get a client using it is SharePoint. SharePoint is a back-end system to help an intranet. And at some point, Microsoft decided, hey, we can take all this information they're generating in their back-end of their business and just publish it on the web and make it a CMS. So they added CMS capabilities to SharePoint, and it's just horrid.
SharePoint was horrid by itself. I couldn't stand it. You needed to have a freaking degree in it before you could use it. Never mind.
Exactly.
Web. Oh.
Hopefully Microsoft's not a sponsor this week. So.
Microsoft as a sponsor. That'd be all right.
But
all right. We've got to start whipping through this. It's going to get along here. So
we might have to do part two next week.
We might. So after you've done that, you've found your theme or custom design that's going to fit the wireframe, what you want to do with that. Now you have to create a site plan. What is going to be the architecture? You might have done elements of this in the wireframe, but you can get a little more advanced here. In fact, there's lots of great, there have been in the past, great articles on SEO architecture. Again, this is pretty high flute and stuff. Definitely want to get an SEO involved if you can. But specific site architectures work best for different types of businesses or different targets, if we're talking e-commerce, it's dramatically different than a standard website. If it's an informational site, you'd want to have it in a different format. The one that's most common for the simpler of sites, I mean, it still works for the more advanced, but it's a little more difficult to explain, is siloing. You'll find a lot of content or a lot of information mm-hmm. about website siloing. And you just search that, and you will find some good tutorials.
Yeah, in general, what it is it's topic siloing. So you create, and we talked about keyword research applied to navigation at the beginning of the show when we first started talking about this. And if you have three different topics that you know are really important to your brand, and you put those in your top level navigation, and you have topic A, then all the content under that topic is going to be related to topic A, and that creates a silo of content around that topic. And that's what we're talking about primarily when we talk about siloing. But it also works in e-commerce because you have products that can be silos, silo of products. You have all the shoes and all the pants and different silos, right? But as long as we're talking about architecture and e-commerce, one thing I want to bring up, and it will help your SEO in the long term, don't build a website that's an e-commerce site that relies solely on your product inventory to drive organic search traffic. Make sure in that site architecture somewhere you have other places other than your inventory and your catalog, wherever your shopping area is, that you can publish content related to your products, whether it be a blog or a knowledge base area or some other silos that you've identified from a content perspective. Don't just have products on that site. Have other areas for content.
Excellent advice. Okay, so architecture not being the simplest of things to plan, but once you've got that done, now you have to plan the page structure and the content. This is probably the more time-consuming. The page structure, not so much. I mean, you've done elements of that already in the wireframing, but content, most certainly. Page structure, you might change on a page-by-page basis. You might not have gotten that granular with your wireframing, but ensuring, you know, is video going to be on this page? Is image going to be on this page? Where do you want to put it? That's basics of page structure.
And there are some page structures that are pretty common. The About Us page, the Contact Us page, the Location page, a Product page, a Blog Post page. Those are pretty common across the board. And if you know you're using one or more of those, that's a place where you can really step in and say, hey, this is what a product page looks like,
yeah,
or this is what a blog post looks like.
And in most cases, the theme that you're going to use is going to have those templates built in. Divi has some of those in their template library within the theme. So you can just go in there and say, I want an About Us page, and it'll load a default layout that you can then edit. Now, the content, though, this comes right full circle around to what David mentioned here. He says, having 2 to 4 keywords mentioned 3 or 4 times on a page, we don't worry about that. The days of that are long gone. We obviously want to make sure that the page is extremely relevant to what we're trying to, the topic we're targeting, but you don't have to be that focused on a keyword. You're going to be able to put this way more eloquently than I can, John.
I guess the thing to think about when you're thinking about content being placed on a page is make sure when you're laying out the design and structuring the page that you leave enough room for a lot of content. If you build a page design and you have here we can put a paragraph of content here, you're going to be restricting what your SEO can do. I think it was Search Metrics did a study that came out early this January, or I think it was either early this January or the end of December this year, that again, they go through and they analyze about 10,000 search results pages and look at all the results and analyze those results, and they give a lot of data. And I always look to see when I see that report of what is the average amount of content on a page that ranks on the first page of Google out of their research. It went up again this year. This year, the average amount of content on a page is 1,200 words.
Wow.
Right? So if you only leave enough room for a paragraph of text, you're really, really, really strangleholding your SEO to be able to perform well for you. Make sure there's room for a lot of content.
Now, just keep in mind, though, that's correlation. There's other issues that would be driving those pages. Maybe because they've created such a great piece of content that it got shared well.
We're talking about an average across 10,000 search results with 10 listings per. So we're talking about a million listings looked at.
Oh, yeah.
Average of 1,200.
I'm just saying that it's not just because the content is 1,200 words that it got that ranking. It's,
that's true.
Yeah.
But the average. So
yes.
So what this means is that the pages that have less content are not doing as well as the pages that have the average, and the pages that have more content are not doing as well as the average.
The argument would be made then that having that amount of content generally is what it takes to impress people and get the kind of metrics you need to get that ranking.
Yeah. Now the trick with having that amount of content that I've discovered is it's hard for content creators sometimes to stay on topic when they have to write that much content about a topic, right? I see they diversify the topic and then they end up going in different directions and targeting different things on the same page, which actually reduces the efficiency of that content. So that the trick there with that much content is make sure you stay on topic.
And then John has to crack the whip.
That's right.
Okay, well, we have one more section left. Again, we could do a few episodes on this, but let's jump into design. Now, if you're going with one of these pre-created themes, well, a part of that's going to be done for you, but you're still going to have to add the graphical elements. You're going to want to ensure that any graphics that you put in the site are optimized or not compressed. You actually call it optimized, but it's the same concept. You want to ensure that they look good but also have small file sizes whenever possible. You'll want to make sure that any video is properly rendered that's embedded perhaps in a third-party system versus YouTube. Pardon me, because if you have YouTube embedded on a page, you're also going to end up having ads. And frankly, that does not look all that good. I like to use, what's it called? Brain fart. Darn it. Vimeo.
That's a service? Wow, man.
That'd be a good one. Vimeo Pro. It's gone up in price a bit, but it's still extremely reasonable, and it allows
There are many advantages to putting up with those ads using Google, though. I'm just saying, don't make a decision just based on the ads.
No. What I tend to use is YouTube as well, but I don't embed it on my page necessarily. Maybe on a blog post, but not on my main, let's say my homepage. You know, I want to make sure I'm using something I can control. But yes, I'm sure there are instances where it would work otherwise. If it's WordPress, install and configure any plugins. Build any key performance indicators based on step one. So ensure that you are building in your analytics, any kind of analytics components that you wanted to track. Yeah.
Can we go back to the plugins thing? Let's talk about a couple of significant plugins, especially since you mentioned WordPress. There are a ton of SEO plugins out there. There's a ton of plugins that will impact SEO. The two that I say that are must-haves from an SEO perspective are the standard WordPress caching program to really speed up the load times of WordPress, and then the Yoast. Those are the two off the top of my head that I'd say make sure those are installed and activated. And when you're using Yoast, remember, it's not just a plugin that you install and it's working for you. You actually have to use it. It adds functionality and features into your WordPress admin that you have to be able to utilize to get the value out of the plugin.
Yeah. And there's, in fact, I think we've done whole episodes on plugins. There's a lot to talk about there. So, building the key performance indicators based on step one. So, again, that could be a specific plugin again. It could be ensuring that you've got certain buttons on your page within your site tracked using Google Analytics. There's a whole learning curve around this, but there are certain things.
I was going to say, make sure you install Google Analytics. That's critical for your SEO.
There you go.
Make sure you set up Webmaster Tools. Dang it! Make sure you get that set up before you hire an SEO, because that's one of the first things they should ask for as well. Same thing with Bing Webmaster Central. Get those set up on your site and collecting information. And there's a lot of things in there that need to be set for your site by your SEO. The sooner you set up analytics, the sooner it starts collecting data that your SEO can use in the future. Those things can be done right away.
Absolutely. And before you launch the site, or at least on the very moment you do, make sure that site is secure. And if we're talking WordPress, which we might as well just be talking WordPress at this point, definitely include the proper plugins and have them set up by an expert. Or at the very least, if you can't afford that, just set it up with something like Securi, or what's the other one that's popular?
I've got to actually have a deck. I presented WordPress security many years ago, so it's an old deck. I'm sure there's new stuff on slides here about WordPress security that's got a lot of good tips about how to change your admin name, how to move your login page, all that kind of stuff, which is higher end security for WordPress, but it's going to help protect you in the long run. So if you go to SlideShare and search for my name, there's a deck in there about WordPress security.
Great. Yeah, and it's something that we have so many people that come to us as new clients that are first coming to us because they need the word has gotten out that we can fix hacks, and we can. We have an amazing developer that does, and he gets in there and he fixes them and finds out what went wrong, and then he locks them down. And it's a lot of work. And if you haven't done it properly, it can also be a major, major impediment to rankings and, business, quite frankly. it's devastating. So
the other thing I would talk about when we're talking about setting up the site, say, analytics, if you're launching a brand new site, there is no reason at this point in time not to launch it as a secure site. Go ahead and get that secure certificate, right. Launch it as HTTPS, make sure it's initially built as a secure site, and that's going to be helpful to you, and it's going to help your SEO as well.
And that can be tricky as well. So, perhaps hire someone to help you with that component. HTTPS can be straightforward, but there are issues that appear, and it can be a bit tough to read through some of the geekery online about it.
It is a geeky topic, that is for sure.
Yes. Even for me, I go, oh, my God, okay, I got to go research this. No. Anyway, even for me, what can I say?
but then again, let's go back to what we said a while ago, and when we first started talking about this. Right after you develop your goals and you understand what your website is going to do for your business, hire your SEO at that point. I'm just going to go back to that. That if you at all possible, that's when you want your SEO involved.
Yeah, and if you heard that when we first said that, you probably thought, oh boy, they're biased. After listening to all this, do you still think that way? I think you agree. There's a lot to this, to creating that site, and it's hard for us to keep on top of it sometimes. So,
And notice we didn't even get to the point where we're talking about optimizing content, writing meta tags, and
no,
we didn't. We're not even close to that yet. This is all the stuff that you're doing as you're preparing to launch your site, build your site. So there's a lot of room for error here that's going to impact you long term from an SEO standpoint, which is why you should get somebody knowledgeable involved at this point.
Perfect. Well, I think that's it. On behalf of myself, Russ Dunn, CEO of Stepforth Web Marketing, and John Carcutt, the Director of SEO and Social Media for Advanced Local, thank you for joining us today. If you have any questions you'd like to share with us, please feel free to post them on our Google Plus community page, easily found by searching SEO 101, just as Dave Barbush did. Thank you, Dave. You can also email me via ross@stepforth.com or reach John via Twitter @JohnCarcutt. Have a great week, and remember to tune into future episodes, which air at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, every Thursday on cranberry.fm.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Opinions expressed are those of the hosts and their guests and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of Cranberry News Marketing and Cranberry.fm. Rebroadcasts or retransmission of this content without proper consent is prohibited.